Hi, this is Jim Daly with Focus on the Family, inviting you to join us at a theater near you on October 3rd, 4th, or 5th to see the new documentary, Mully. It's the powerful story of Charles Mully, a modern-day hero in Kenya who heard God's call to reach out to the orphans around him. We believe Mully will inspire thousands to embrace the cause of orphans and change the world one child at a time. Buy tickets now at focusonthefamily.com/Mully, M-U-L-L-Y.
This is John Fuller, and please remember to let us know how you're listening to these programs on a podcast, app, or website.
What do you mean we don't talk
anymore? When was the last time we sat down and just had a conversation?
For crying out loud, what do you think we're doing now? I could be watching the game, I could be playing the computer.
Watch your silly game, okay?
Fine.
Alone.
I usually do.
Well, there is a better way to communicate in your marriage. That is not healthy, but all too often we react. We say the wrong thing without thinking. Emotions escalate. But today on Focus on the Family, we're going to help you learn how to stop those kinds of angry interactions before they become ugly and cause damage in your relationship. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, the fact is conflict can be a good thing. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but every marriage I know has some areas of disagreement or different perspectives. That's called being a person. And we tend to see those differences as negatives, things we've got to fix or change or, you know, kind of mold our partner into seeing things our way. But maybe God has brought the two differences together in order for you to complement each other. That's a more biblical approach to this. We've heard many times on this program learning how to work together to find a consensus and common ground as a couple, even when we disagree, can actually make our marriage stronger. And I think that's right.
And that's our hope for today's program, is to help you agree with us that conflict can be healthy. We should clarify, though, that we're talking primarily to couples who are in a pretty good place in their relationship.
Right, kind of a tune-up program,
yeah.
I would say. And our guests today have a lot of great advice and practical help for each one of us, including Gene and me. I love these kinds of shows because I will take one or two things away from this show that will help me.
And we trust that'll be the case for you, too. We have our colleagues, Dr. Greg Smalley and his wife, Erin, back with us. Greg is the Vice President of Marriage and Family Formation here at Focus on the Family, and the Smalleys often speak and write about these matters. But more than that, they've experienced the challenges of marital discord themselves. And here's how we began our conversation with Greg and Erin on today's Focus on the Family.
Okay, let's go right at it, because some couples who have had, maybe they married well, I mean, we use that term, oh, you married well, because they don't see a lot of conflict in their relationship. They seem to start day one, things go smoothly, the kids come along. It's been a pretty easy sail for them. And when they hear of other Christian couples that struggle in certain ways, there can be a very easy propensity to kind of judge that, right?
Yeah, and many couples will say, oh, we don't even have conflict, but we look at it a little bit differently, that really conflict can be viewed as a gift, that really there's gifts that come with differing opinions and how you work through it. If you work through it in a healthy way, it actually can lead to the gifts of understanding your spouse, understanding yourself, and learning something about this marriage entity that is also there.
Let me differentiate, because it's important. John alluded to it, but there is the normal strain of conflict, and then there's severe conflict. And we're talking about the normal stuff of life, correct?
Absolutely. The sign of a healthy marriage is not the absence of conflict. What's the sign of a healthy marriage is we know how to work through differences. And when we're frustrated with each other, when we're hurt by one another, I mean, that's the mark of a truly healthy marriage. I would say that combat is bad. Conflict is good.
Okay.
Well, and I would distinguish it that way.
Let's go right to it. What are some of those things that we define as marital conflict? Just give us a label. What are the adjectives that describe it? Marital conflict.
Disagreement, hurt, pet peeves, expectations that go unfulfilled, things that I think she should be doing that she's not doing. Just, you know, any of those things, I think we can put under the umbrella kind of conflict. And so it doesn't have to be this massive, we were throwing dishes at each other, and that's how I define conflict. It can be a silent suffering of, I just feel hurt, and she said something, and she didn't probably even mean it, but it really hurt me. I mean, any time that we're disconnected from one another, hurt by one another, I think that's what we mean by conflict.
And in your book, which that's the basis for what we're talking about, at least one of the keys that you talk about in The Whole Hearted Wife, 10 Keys to a More Loving Relationship. This is one of the keys, is healthy conflict. Mm-hmm. In that regard, what are the triggers? I mean, we describe some of the adjectives of conflict, but what are those buttons? We always use that terminology, you know how to push my buttons, or you're hitting the trigger. Why do we use that to describe what's going on?
You know, there's both the topics that are typical for couples to be fighting over, you know, money, in-laws, kids, you know, their sexual relationship, whatever it is. There's, you know, the topics, but yet there are these buttons that are underlying, kind of these sensitive areas that we all have. We're yet to meet someone who doesn't have buttons.
And why do we have those buttons?
They're really what they are. They're just sensitive areas in our heart that have been sensitized for a reason, through an experience or something that happened to us, how we interpreted that experience.
Disappointment, pain.
Disappointment, pain, feeling criticized, feeling not good enough, feeling unworthy, feeling invisible, whatever it is, we all have them.
Yeah. I think they're, for me, they're deeper emotions, mm-hmm, that we're just really, really super sensitive to. For me, it's any time that I feel like I've made a mistake as a husband, as a father, here at work, and I hate to feel like a failure.
When you feel that way, what do you do?
So what happens, what's interesting, is that your heart instantly closes. It's like that little roly-poly bug. You know, when you flick it, it just rolls up into a ball. I'm telling you, that's what happens to our heart. Our button gets pushed. And again, we're not thinking this through. This happens at some, you know, level far away from our awareness. Our hearts close, and then we start to react. And so for me, what I usually do is I start to defend myself. I'm trying
even before the battle begins.
Oh, yeah.
And he's very consistent.
Thank you. I'm very good at it.
That's an area to be consistent at.
In other words, my goal is, if I can explain the truth, if I can explain what I was thinking, if I can explain it in such a way to Erin, my hope is that she'll go, oh, well, okay. Now, oh, I get it. Yeah, okay, fine. I just misunderstood you. We're cool. Everything is fine. And
does she ever say
that? Never. One time has it quite gone down that way. Because usually when I'm defending myself, that's going to push her buttons.
Mm-hmm. And typically when he starts defending himself, my big button, actually I have two that are pretty big, invalidation, because when he defends himself, then it pushes the invalidation button for me, because I don't feel like he values or gets what I'm feeling, or that my perspective isn't accurate, therefore it's not good enough. And so then I go, my heart closes, I go into reaction mode, and like Greg said, this just happens. I mean, it can happen in 2.5 seconds and you're completely unaware of it, yet it completely changes your behavior.
Yeah. We've been teaching this for years. And we still, I mean, this still happens.
Yeah, probably less frequently.
Less frequently, yeah. But it's still.
Yeah, I mean,
we were teaching a marriage seminar and got into the big old argument.
Okay, hold on. Now, you're in Japan doing a marriage seminar?
We were.
Yes. What happened?
With our 17-year-old daughter, Murphy, with us.
As witness?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Or as judge.
Mm. Yes.
It seemed like a part of my role was to kind of be tour guide, and I had the maps and I would study where we were going. So we were going to this one real famous kind of this antique shrine. And so I mapped out the route and where we would go, and there were some really cool things to see. And so when I get us there, it took a little longer than it looked like on the map. And so honestly, when we got there, we were all pretty tired.
Well, this was – and let's just add in that this was like day four of walking the city of Tokyo.
It's and, one big city.
Yes, and we were exhausted. And so we get to the shrine. We finally walk in. It's this beautiful outdoor park area. And for some reason, Murphy and I wanted to go one direction, but you had some real strong opinions about going a different direction.
Well,
there was
conflict.
This really cool bridge, and we could be on the bridge and take this great family photo and all this. So in my mind, I wanted to take us the scenic route. They're so tired, they want to go the most direct route. And so it bothered me. It felt – and see, in that moment, I think what happened is I felt disrespected.
Because you had done all this work,
I'd
mapping
done all this
it out,
work.
And they ignored you.
And they ignored me. And
no
so
man can
they
relate
start,
to what you're talking
yeah,
about.
So they start taking off in one direction. And so I'm thinking, well, actually what happened is that they, I think I reacted.
Yeah, we were stunned by his reaction to this. And he.
I'm like, I threw like a temper tantrum.
Did. And,
I'm like, I worked all this time to figure this out and you guys don't want to go the way I want to go, blah, blah,
and
blah.
And Murphy and I were like, what's going on? She's like, what's going on with Dad? I'm like, I have no idea. And so we immediately, being the pleasers that we both are, we're like, oh, no, that's fine. We'll go that way. So we start to go his way. Well, he goes the opposite way.
I'm mad.
He goes your way now.
Yeah,
he goes
I'm
our
like,
way.
Forget it. Fine.
Because you're going to prove a point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So so I'm thinking, certainly, we're in a foreign country. They've never looked at a map. They don't know where they're at. They're not going to walk off. They'll follow me. Certainly they'll follow me. So I'm walking and I turn around and they're nowhere. They kept going the other way. Now I know the map, so I know that it's going to end, the trails are going to intersect. So I'm thinking, well, now I'll really show them and that they shouldn't be leaving me because I have the map and
everything. We're going the other way going, surely Dad's going to follow us. He won't leave us alone in a foreign country and, you know, walking on this isolated path. But no,
they
Greg.
They underestimated my stubbornness.
Yeah, no, Greg. We got to the end and where it should have crossed over, and no, Greg.
We don't know what happened. Now I can't find him. So then I panic. So I'm thinking they're gone.
So you've gone from mad to uh-oh.
Yeah, like I'm going to have to use all my skills and find them and fight off the bad guys and get
your pocket knife out of the compass.
Daughter, but yeah, exactly. So we finally end up. I find them. They've already now gone through the shrine. So they've seen all the really cool stuff.
And you're still outside.
Yeah, and I'm sweating. I've been running back and forth.
He's fuming.
I wasn't
with
built
steam
to jog.
Out
so,
of his ears.
Yeah. Oh, I was not. Right.
So now that you have actually committed two crimes. You didn't follow
you,
him the
Jim
first
Daly.
Time. And then you took the time to go through the museum.
Yes.
Without him.
Okay.
Without
yes.
Him.
Yes. Yes.
Without even thinking about him.
Finally,
yeah.
Someone
I just kept thinking, well, eventually he's going to show up. I mean, I hope. Unless
so
someone took
them,
him.
You found them and just hugged and kissed them and told them how much you loved
them. Oh, it was such a beautiful.
You thought they were
reunion.
Kidnapped or something.
So we get back together and we were, you know, sarcastic with each other and we're, you know, shut down and we just start walking in some direction, not talking. I didn't want to talk. She didn't want to talk. Murphy is like looking at both of us going, this is so awkward. I hate when you two fight. Here's the cool part in all of this. And we will say this over and over and over and over again. That I'm telling you, there is a way to use that kind of a scenario to where all of a sudden we are so disconnected. We are so frustrated with each other. I mean, Satan's attacking our mind. I mean, I'm running my mind silently just, you know, I can't believe, you know, they did this and how disrespectful and they don't value all the work that I put in. There is a way to actually go from that level of disconnection to a spot of deeper intimacy and connection.
Well, how do we de-escalate that, especially as believers? How do you do that? How did you do it, or how would you do that differently?
The thing that I've learned is the worst possible thing you could do in that moment is to try to work it out relationally first. Mm. The absolute worst. And I think that goes against what everybody's taught. You know, we're taught to, in the moments when we're in conflict, we need to somehow sit down and start talking and we need to work this thing out. It is honestly the worst piece of advice. The greatest thing that I've learned is not to try to work it out between my wife and I first. You know, Jesus laid it out really nice in Matthew 7, where he basically is saying, you hypocrite, why do you look at the dust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the log in your own eye? And I like it where he says, first. So he literally is giving us an order. He says, first get the log out of your own eye. First deal with you. I need to go between me and the Lord, and I need to get my heart back open. Mm. That's the problem. That's why conversations between spouses when we're angry and mad and frustrated and shut down, our hearts are closed, why that doesn't work is because you can't have a good conversation mm-hmm. when your buttons have been all stirred up and your heart shut down. It just won't ever happen. Mm-hmm. That cannot be the formula for success. It just doesn't work.
And I would say that first and foremost, that they have to take a break. that it has to, they have to get away from what is going on, whatever the topic is, whatever, from each other. You know, and the thing is that you have to let each other know if you're going to leave physically, if you're going to go into another room, you know, let your spouse know, hey, I'm stirred up, my heart's closed, I'm going to take a time out here, take a break, and I'll be back. I'll come back and we're going to work this out. But right now I want to go get my heart open. Or if you're in a situation like in Japan, where you just kind of emotionally step back and you quit engaging around the conversation, but your goal is to get your heart open.
Yeah, for me, what I've learned, if I can, as Aaron is saying, if I can just step away from her, so now I couldn't run off. It's just pulling back into my own thoughts and going to the Lord. That's the key.
So you can still be physically present and
you can
seek God out in that moment and try to bite your tongue and don't respond with the negative comments.
I can tell her and just say, hey, I need to go into a different room. And there's nothing wrong with that. Again, my job is to get my own heart open. That's my responsibility. There's a verse in Mark 9:50 that says, salt is good, but if the salt has lost its saltiness, how will you make it salty again? Have salt in yourself. In other words, it's this personal responsibility. If something didn't have salt, it's saying I need to do something about that. I need to have salt in myself. I need to get the log out of my own eye. What I've learned, I go before the Lord and I'll start to pray. And usually my prayer is, okay, she's your daughter. You made her. What in the world is going on? Can't you speak to her? Can't you let her know that she's wronged me? But eventually what I do is I begin to ask God, what is in me that I need to deal with? What is within my control? Anytime we have conflict, there's always some part of it that I can own and take responsibility. Could be that I'm tired, exhausted. Could be a part of my upbringing that I'm sensitive to certain things. You know what I'm saying? There's always something that I can own.
But let me clarify. Are you saying the first step is to have that awareness? Where's this feeling coming from? To settle your own heart down.
Yes. See, you are focused on God. What do I need to be aware of right now? And as I walked, I mean, Aaron and I are walking next to each other. She's thinking about her and I'm thinking about and praying, just going, God, what is going on? Why am I so mad at my daughter and wife right now? And that's when I realized that it's because I feel totally taken advantage of. I've been doing all the work and then I choose the route because they're making me do it all and then they're not following me. It feels so disrespected. See, that's when I began to settle into, see, that's my stuff.
Right.
And that's when I just turned to the Lord and just say, God, that man, What do we do about this thing? I mean, I've just seen when I go to him that he begins to soften my heart through his perspective, through his awareness. He just speaks that into us. I love that John verse, that you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. I mean, that's what I'm looking for.
You talk about win-win solutions in the book. Describe how you get there. In the middle of that kind of disagreement or battle in the marriage, how do you take that deep breath and go, okay, how do I find the win-win here?
Well, win-win solutions come because we are unified, because we're committed to unity, and we realize that we're on the same team, which is why you'll never get to a win-win if you don't start from the place of committing to get your heart open first.
Let me ask you this because it's important. I think in the Western culture that we live in, it's about winning. And it permeates us in every way, whether it's sports or vocation, and yes, in the church. It's about being better, being on top of your game. It's about winning. I think that's why we're attracted to leaders who exude winning and that kind of victorious attitude. But it seems that Scripture, especially when you look at the New Testament, what Jesus is saying, it's not about winning. It's about loving me and loving those around you and giving of yourself. It's counterintuitive. And in marriage, I think we take too much of the world into our marriages. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. But think of how many times God talks in context of marriage that we're one, that we're to be unified.
Yeah.
I love in Genesis 11:6, where he's talking about the Tower of Babel. When he's looking down, he says, boy, when all the people now have come together and they're speaking the same language, wow, nothing is impossible for them. That's marriage. When we are unified, when we're speaking the same language, there's nothing that's impossible for us. That marriage is, in our opinion, one of the most powerful forces on earth. Huh. I tell you what, Satan recognizes that. He fears what our marriage could become. And so he goes out of his way to keep us disunified. And that's why conflict is such an important part that we learn how do we manage and walk through this.
Okay, let me get down to it because we're wrapping up. Yeah, tonight, give me three things we can do as a couple tonight to change the tempo, to change the defeat that we've had at the hand of the enemy. We want that victorious relationship. We want to honor Christ in our relationship. What can we start doing today that will get us on that path of real victory in our marriage, that the enemy of our soul will tremble because of what we represent before God?
Number one, recognize that conflict is an opportunity. Don't avoid it. Don't shy away from it. Figure out how do we use conflict to grow closer, to understand myself better, to understand my wife better, to understand our marriage better. So see it truly as an opportunity.
And then also, I think it's important to choose your battles because, you know, in the day in and day out busyness of life, we start picking at things that really aren't, you know, big in the big picture. And so choose the things that you really need to work on or communicate about or, you know, bring up an issue about. So really take a step back. If there's an issue, go to the Lord and ask him, you know, is this, you know, how big of a deal is this? You know, where's my heart at in it? And, you know, do I need to go to him and confront this? Or is this something that I can set aside and turn the other cheek?
All right, let's put everything into practice in the story of Japan. And how did you fall in love again after Japan?
So the biggest thing is that if you take a moment and get your heart back open, I think it all falls into place. Aaron and I, and most people, we communicate really, really good when our hearts are open. See, the biggest barrier to our inability to communicate in those moments just is that our hearts are closed. That's the awareness that I had to learn. That is always the place that I begin, is I'm not going to try to talk to her until my heart is open. So as we were walking, both of us went to the Lord. We got our hearts back open. There's a great verse in Proverbs 16:23 that a wise man's heart guides his mouth. See, that's our battle cry now, is that so once we our hearts were open, and you know when your heart's open when you're actually willing to be a listener. And you're willing, and you start to go, wow, what was really going on for her? And you can feel that compassion and the empathy and all that return. So we just literally, we were walking a ways apart. We just kind of walked back together. And that's when we just said, hey, what happened? Mm-hmm. You know, Aaron, what happened? Greg, what happened? And we were able to talk it through. And she said, what did that make you feel? And I was able to go, you know, I felt taken advantage of. I felt disrespected. Well, I felt abandoned. We drew in our daughter. How did it make you feel? When I left you guys, and she said, I totally felt abandoned by my dad. And I'm like, oh. But see, my heart was open then. Then I was really, okay, I got it. And see, that drew us even closer together because now we're being real and wow, this happened.
So conflict can actually lead to greater intimacy.
See, that's our argument, is that we, once our hearts were open, see, I learned something new about myself. I didn't have any idea that I was feeling taken advantage of by my daughter and my wife. I didn't know that. So I learned something about me. I learned something about my wife and daughter, about how they were really feeling. And then we were able to break an ineffective pattern. Hmm. And so you see, that's the payoff. That's all of a sudden now we were joined. And then the final thing we did was we just said, so how do we not let this happen again? And we just all agreed that, you know, that I wouldn't be so uptight on having to
Let's
go.
Let's all
certain...
agree. John, do you agree with that? I don't think Greg should be so uptight.
Yes. But, you know, I mean, I said I could be more flexible. I'm not going to run this thing, you know, as we're doing it my way. And I said, let me draw you guys in. And they said, you shouldn't have to be fully burdened with figuring all this out. We want to help in that. And that was our win-win.
Yeah, okay. That's
and
a good
after,
example.
Yeah, after we worked all that out, we had a great time, an even better time because we were more connected and we knew where each of us were at. And I mean, that is the gift of working through conflict in a healthy way.
This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and our guests were Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, sharing some wisdom from their book, The Wholehearted Wife, 10 Keys to a More Loving Relationship.
That was a great conversation with Greg and Aaron, and I really appreciate the work they're doing here at Focus on the Family to help strengthen and rescue marriages. The primary takeaway from what we shared today is this: married couples need to stay engaged in their relationship. Tragically, we hear from so many husbands and wives who have separated emotionally from one another, and they're still married, but in name only. It's kind of a business relationship. They're just living together like roommates, and that's not a healthy place to be, and that's not what God intended for your marriage. If you and your spouse are struggling in that way, if you heard what we talked about today and you did the self-assessment, said that's kind of where we are, I hope you'll contact us here at Focus on the Family. We have many, many resources and tools to help you get back on track with your relationship so it can be a witness to those around you. That's the goal. Let's let our marriages shine in such a way that people say, what is different about you?
Yeah, so get a copy of the book, The Wholehearted Wife by Greg and Aaron Smalley, and other helps as well when you call 800, the letter A and the word family, or go to focusonthefamily.com/radio.
John, I also want to mention the great work at Hope Restored, which is our intensive counseling group in Branson, Missouri. The great news is almost 85% of the couples that attend Hope Restored, 2 years later, their marriages are intact and they're doing so much better. That should be incentive enough to say, let's give that a try. This program is for those marriages that are in deep, deep trouble, and you need to really concentrate on how you're going to salvage your marriage. And I, again, just want to stress, invest in this, because those couples are far happier than those that choose divorce. 5 years later, all the research is showing that to be true. So do it. If you're in trouble, don't be embarrassed. Do what you need to do to save your marriage. And for those who support the ministry, or maybe you haven't supported Focus, could I ask you to consider giving to Focus so together we can help more marriages and save more marriages, to be bold? That is the work of the Lord right now, I think, in the community of believers. We need to strengthen our marriages and reduce our divorce rates. And we can do that together through Hope Restored.
And Hope Restored is really just one of the ways that friends like you have helped save more than 160,000 troubled marriages last year. And we want to thank you for that and ask for your continued support of Focus on the Family today. And when you donate a gift of any amount, we'll send a complimentary copy of Greg and Aaron's book, The Wholehearted Wife, which I'm sure will be beneficial for you as a couple. Donate at focusonthefamily.com/radio, or when you call 800, the letter A and the word family, 800-232-6459. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.
Hey, what's up? This is Michael Tate from the Newsboys.
When did it become breaking a rule to say your name?
Did you know students have been told to stop reading their Bibles at school? That's why we're supporting the thousands of students participating in Bring Your Bible to School Day, sponsored by Focus on the Family.
Bring Your Bible to School Day on Thursday, October 5th. Register to win a free trip for four to see the Newsboys in concert and meet the band in person.
Get involved by going to bringyourbible.org. That's bringyourbible.org.